Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Olvinger. The city of Uvalde, Texas will pay $2 million to the families of the 19 students and two teachers killed nearly 2 years ago at Robb Elementary. Attorney Josh Koskoff, who represented the family, says that doesn't mean the case is closed.
We've settled with the city. There will be lawsuits forthcoming, most immediately against the state of Texas, which has done nothing at all but burden this town.
The settlement also requires better training for police officers. State officials say four people were killed and nearly three dozen were hurt after yesterday's EF3 tornado in Greenfield, Iowa. A judge halted the auction of Graceland by a company which claimed Elvis Presley's estate defaulted on a loan the property used as collateral. 7 months into the Israel-Hamas war, Norway, Ireland, and Spain say they'd recognize a Palestinian state. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. A U.S. House committee takes up the bipartisan Kids Online Safety Act this week. Parents of children harmed by social media say greater protections are badly needed and long overdue. Deb Schmill's daughter died of an accidental overdose after she was bullied online.
It's going to be very upsetting to the parents, to so many people in this country who want to see this happen. They want to see big tech regulated. They don't want to see kids dying every day.
Tech companies are fighting sweeping change, citing free speech rights. All over Wisconsin, this year's Click It or Ticket campaign is underway. Memorial Day weekend is our unofficial start of summer, and every year, agencies and departments increase patrols around this time. All drivers and passengers are required by Wisconsin law to wear seatbelts while they travel. Click It or Ticket runs through June 2nd. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson for Civic Media.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on Lake Air 107.5 FM and 1260 AM WLAK and on the Civic Media app.
Your forecast for you and your community. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. We love Wisconsin weather and tracking it to keep you updated whenever it changes. Listen for our weather-ready stories so you're always prepared on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. A new poll out at Reuters Ipsos. They have found President Biden's approval rating the lowest it's been in 2 years. 36% approval rating at this point, tying the lowest reading of his presidency. And they're saying, hey, this could be a warning sign for his reelection. And you know how much I hate polls? Because, you know, I guess it's all who you polled, what zip code, what area code, where you're going, who you're talking to, because it's a small sample. But it's the messaging that comes out of this. It's the, well, things are bad for Biden. And you don't see this much on the other side. When the polling comes out and says, you know, Trump and Biden are in, Trump's winning. No, they're even. And I guess part of me goes, you know, given the realities of the two candidates, I guess being even is a massive win for Trump, given that we've kind of forgotten how bad his 4 years were. Now, understand, you've got a massive right-wing media structure that is his biggest cheerleader. And you also have that right-wing media infrastructure that attacks Joe Biden at every turn. There is literally nothing he can do that is right. So, you know, I find it interesting, and I saw this graph, I think it was over at the Washington Post, and it was talking about how people feel about the economy in their personal lives, but, you know, how they think about things in the other world, how other people are doing. And look, this isn't just about the economy. We talk about Congress. You know, people, you know, think my congressman's great, but all the other ones are terrible. You know, about schools. Hey, my kid's school is good. We love our local public school, but it's those other ones, those ones we hear about. You know, our teacher, we love our kid's teacher. Oh, that teacher is so wonderful. But you know, those other ones, they're the bad ones. And we hear this all across the spectrum. And this is by design. What's interesting to me is, you know, the Washington Post had a piece and it basically said, you know, for the most part, when asked, you know, how is your economy doing? How are things for you? How are you making ends meet? How are you faring in this economy? It's about pretty even, about, you know, somewhere 72-75% are I'm doing good, doing all right. My financial situation is good. But when they start talking about, you know, the local economy, that drops precipitously. And this latest poll said, you know, look, you know, people when asked, how are you doing? About 72% said, we're doing good. You know, things are good. We're making it. And they asked, well, how's the local economy? Drops all the way down to 42% people saying, yeah, it's good. When you're talking about the national economy, drops all the way down to 22%. So how do you get to this disconnect? And you go and look, the Washington Post had a graph where it went through a bunch of swing states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, you know, the ones that are going to decide this next presidential election. And what's interesting is, you know, you got these people saying, you know, the state economy is doing really well. Doing okay. North Carolina, for instance, 64% of the people said state economy is doing great. The national economy, just 33% said it's doing all right. And you go, how do you get to this disconnect? How do you get to this place where what's out there is bad? How do you get to this place to where, you know, what I see around me is fine. I'm okay. I'm doing well. I'm making it. But what's around the corner, that's bad. How do you explain this massive disconnect between personal reality and everyone else's reality? Now, look, I get it. Personally, you know, inflation's been killing us. But it's not Joe Biden's fault. Corporate America has an awful lot to do with this. There's no switch in the Oval Office that goes, inflation's going to be high today. There's not. But we're sold this constant barrage of outrage candy and of anger. We're sold this, you know, Biden did this. So the question, you know, I keep coming back to is, you know, when you go to the polls, because you know, there's this view that people go to the polls and they vote about how their kitchen table is doing, how they're able to pay their bills, keep food on the table. You know, the kids getting new shoes. You know, are we taking vacations? Are we thinking about the future in a more positive way? And look, a lot of people are, you know, when I talk to people, I find this to be the reality. They're doing okay. Got a raise at work. You know, costs are a little bit high, but we're not falling behind. We're paying our bills. You know, we're up to date on, you know, all this stuff. You know, we're thinking about, you know, the future. You know, we're making it. We're doing good. We're doing okay. But then you start talking about the greater economy. It's all bad. And it's because of what they hear. And look, again, I go back to, we all have different experiences as workers, as consumers, as you know, people watching our children grow up and come into this economy. But I got to tell you, what we're seeing in our corporate-controlled media, what we're being force-fed, this is the dangerous stuff. And look, our news has gotten more negative over the decades. The Fox Newses of the world, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. If it's destructive to Democrats, it leads. It's all about a frame. It's all about, you know, when this person does something, it's all terrible. It's all bad. When this does something, someone does something, it's all good. And it's never like that. It's never been like that. So our ability to critically think about what is really happening has basically been diminished, because the question becomes, will we go to the polls and vote how we're doing? Reagan asked, are you better off, than you were 4 years ago? And the answer unequivocally is abso-freaking-lutely we're better off than we were 4 years ago, because I still remember empty store shelves. I remember being locked down. I remember all of the chaos that came out of poor leadership in the White House. So when you ask me that question, are you doing better today than you were 4 years ago? The answer is without question. No doubt about it. No argument to be had. Yes, better today than 4 years ago. So the question is, will people go to the polls and go, yeah, I'm doing better now. I'm moving and things are going in the right direction. Or are they going to vote for what they're told to believe, which is, it's all coming. Yeah. How long have we been hearing? This is the thing that gets me. How long have we been hearing that recession is around the corner? There's a recession coming. I mean, it's propping back up again. There's a recession coming. And yeah, at some point down the road, there will be a recession. There always is. It's part of the ebbs and flows of the economy. But it's not tomorrow. It's not next week. And this is what we're told, be afraid of tomorrow. This isn't the country that we've been. And what's interesting to me is, the news that is out there that I do find interesting. Like, I'm still amazed that, people think of Donald Trump as this great businessman, when the reality is this big asset that he's got at Truth Social, which evidently, landed him, a larger pie of a $5 billion asset. Truth Social made $770,000in one quarter, but they lost $327 million in one quarter. And you go, I'm sorry, is that what we want here? I hear the Ohio governor actually said out loud, one of the reason that their tax revenue collections were lower than expected, that were worse, is because of the tax cuts. The tax cuts that they gave to the very wealthy. And this is the part that drives me insane. We know what's going on, but they keep selling us on this idea that, oh, no, it's the water's not wet. The sky's not blue. No. Believe us. Believe the outrage. Believe the anger. Hate your neighbor. All that stuff. So am I surprised that people go, yeah, my congressman's good, but they're all bad. My teacher's good, but all the rest of them, they're all bad. And the economy. I'm doing okay. Most people I know are doing okay. They're complaining about prices, as we all are. And I would argue, I know who we should be complaining to. But ultimately, the economy is doing pretty well. And then when you look at the aggregate numbers, the Dow is higher than it's been. All of the economies moving in the right direction numbers are all in the right direction. But you can't change how people think. Especially when they're inundated with it's all bad. Especially when they're inundated with the others are coming to take your children or whatever nonsense of the day, whatever crazy du jour pops up. And understand, there will be more of this. I'd like to talk about the real issues. Why we're in the mess we're in? Bad policy. Allowing corporate America to dominate industries. The competition that the right told us that they loved so much, all but gone. And what we're sold from our corporate-controlled mainstream media is division and nonsense. So when I see Tucker Carlson, who the right loves, who believes every word out of his mouth as the God's honest truth, when I see him launch his show on Russian state television, I got to ask, which side are they on? And for my red hat folks, where you're getting your news, which side are they on? Are they on the side of working people or on the side of corporations and the very wealthy? That's the question we should be talking about. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Biden administration is releasing 1 million barrels of gasoline from the Northeast Reserve. The goal, lower gas prices at the pump this summer. And, you know, I got to tell you, as I'm reading through the article, I'm going, you know, how about we go after these oil companies who've been gouging us for the last couple of years? How about we go after the obscene profits that they've been gouging out of us? Here's a start. Or maybe we take a look at what Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan pointed out yesterday on his Twitter feed, that evidently there's some CEO, some American CEO caught colluding with, you know, the oil producers overseas, and it could mean billions out of your pocket. And here to share some thoughts on, well, where this money's going, I've asked Wisconsin Representative Mark Pocan to come join us. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Glad to be here.
So walk me through what you said yesterday, because, you know, I see this and I'm going, if it's true, there's an American CEO who's colluding with what these OPEC nations to keep prices elevated, this should be on every newspaper, on every radio and TV program across this country.
I agree. So, you know, I think the reason it's slightly obscure is because the Federal Trade Commission, which, you know, we follow their news daily, right? No one follows the Federal Trade Commission, but their chair, Lina Khan, does a great job in going after these big companies trying to merge and make it tougher and tougher for consumers. And she's the one who went after specifically an oil company that was being bought by Exxon, and the CEO had been colluding hundreds of private and public messages with OPEC, which is a Saudi Arabian entity, to try to price fix and supply fix oil so that they could get higher prices. And ultimately, he gets bought out by Exxon. And, you know, what the head of the FTC did is said things like Exxon can't bring him on the board for so many years, and there's a few other things. But, you know, my attitude is if you've got someone who is outright trying to price fix and supply fix with a foreign entity, and that could mean a buck extra at the pump, you know, when they do this across the board, that's like $150, $160 billion to American consumers. That man or woman should be deciding what it's going to look like to wear orange, right?
Exactly.
They should have shackles. They should have to enter our prison system, you know, and the fact that instead they just can't serve on a board for a few years, you know, much more should be done. But because this was an action through a mildly obscure federal agency, I think that's why it hasn't gotten the outrage that it really should.
Well, I mean, I look at all of the corporate crime that goes on, whether it's union busting, whether it's price fixing, whether it's any of this stuff. It's always the dreaded don't do it again notice, or or you can't be on the board for a couple of days. It's never, like you said, being a member of the state, a guest of the state at the Gray Bar Hotel, which I think we need to get to. So why aren't we, as a country, going after these profiteers? Because you look at everybody across the board, the thing that they're talking about is inflation. We're struggling to put food on the table, keep a roof over our head. We see, you know, in Ohio, where you had that householder situation where electric prices are 40% higher because of the gimmicks that went on there. How come we're not going after these people and locking these people up?
I'm with you. That's my question. That's why I asked the chair, Lina Khan, can't we do more? And she does have some other things in her purview. But I also brought this up directly to the Biden administration. You know, with everyone who is concerned about especially gas and food prices, right? On gas, this just happened this month. We should be calling them out for this and explaining why. In fact, don't forget, I think originally gas prices went up years ago, pre-COVID, when we had that snowstorm down in Texas, and they don't invest in their infrastructure, so they had to stop production. And they artificially kept prices up and never really brought them back down since then. I mean, we've been dealing with this for quite a while, but now we actually have some proof about what they're doing. But on food companies, I think they said there's four food companies that account for the distribution of 60% of our food. Once again, if you only have a few big entities, guess what? You have shrinkflation, you have increased prices, you have all the things that are ripping off consumers. I understand, and I think most people understand, that when we came out of COVID, everything opened worldwide at once. There was limited supply of goods, demand was high, and that was inflation, right? That brought our costs up. But now people who still are doing this are generally just price gouging consumers. And that's why it's a different sort of thing. I mean, Joe Biden clearly wasn't responsible for worldwide inflation as the president of one country, but he's certainly also not the person in charge of who's keeping our prices artificially high in things like gasoline and food, but he can call those people out, and I think he needs to do more.
Now, are you sure he didn't do it? Because, you know, every time I turn on the right-wing media outlets, every time I talk to my red hat friends, they believe there's a switch in the White House, and, you know, Biden just, you know, flicks it on and off just to make us miserable.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the argument, in fact, after we were talking to the FTC commissioner, very clearly, I mean, hundreds of messages, text messages, and other public communications to try to conspire with OPEC, again, a foreign entity, to keep the, you know, prices high and supply down. And after going back and forth, all of a sudden, one of the Republicans on the committee goes, okay, let's tell the truth. This is because he didn't open that one pipeline. No, no, this has nothing even close. That's their rhetoric. That's the Kool-Aid that they've drinking. But the reality is, when you have an oil executive and you have the proof of the messages with a foreign entity to try to price fix or supply fix, because we didn't do more, that's why it's not front page news. So orange is the new black. Let's put this guy in a jumpsuit, and then that might make the front page.
I'm with you. But, you know, the reality is, and I think you hit on it a second ago, you know, we just talked about it the other day, upwards of 80% of our meat in this country is four companies. You know, four airlines control 80% of air travel. Three companies control, you know, over 90% of the soda market. Three companies control, well, 3/4 of the cereal market. And you, and the reason we don't hear about it is, well, because six companies control everything we see, hear, and read. So we've got a consolidation problem, Congressman.
And the FTC is finally, under Joe Biden, going after some of that. We just turned down a merger between Albertsons and Kroger's grocery store, because that would have made prices go up again to have fewer companies in that market. But there's a whole lot more we need to do in this area. I mean, also, you know, we already spend a ton of money with the Pentagon, like almost $1 trillion a year. It's a number that most people can't even fathom what that means. And yet we have consolidation there, where it used to be you had, you know, a dozen companies competing for bids in certain areas. Now it's sometimes two or three, sometimes it's one. So the FTC also is turning down some of those mergers, but we've got to be more aggressive in breaking apart those big entities that are getting too big, and we're the ones paying while the CEOs and their boards wind up, you know, spending many months in the Caribbean during the winter.
Yeah, now, you know, obviously November, we're about less than 6 months away from the November election. Inflation's one of the top issues that people talk about. You know, will this, do you think this stuff will matter to voters? You know, just pointing out the fact that corporate America has been screwing us, because this isn't new. They've been doing this for decades. Do you think this is going to matter come November?
I think it will. I mean, one, and that was my advice to the Biden administration, was call this stuff out much, much more aggressively. I think I had three meetings last week with them, and this was my singular message, right? The most important thing I think that we can do. But he's done a lot also. You know, in the Inflation Reduction Act, if you're on Medicare, we capped your out-of-pocket expenses for prescription drugs at $2,000. We capped insulin at $35. We want to do it for everyone. The Republicans wouldn't let us. We actually, for the first time, are negotiating for drug prices with for people on Medicare. And think about it, taking on Big Pharma, there's 15,000 lobbyists in Washington, 10% of them are Big Pharma, and Joe Biden is standing up to them. So there's a lot of reasons why those wealthy special interests want to have Donald Trump back in office because they'll get a tax break and they'll go unregulated. But Joe Biden has done a lot to reduce energy costs, to reduce our healthcare costs. We just need him to be a little more vocal, I think, on these ripoffs on gas and food.
No, I was quoted in a Hill article recently where, you know, the author asked me, you know, how can the administration do better at messaging to working people? I go, look, they got a great message, a transformational message. We're moving away from 40 years of bad, horrible neoliberal policies, and we're actually reshoring manufacturing, investing in this country. We're investing in all kinds of great things. But it's like, you know, having the greatest Christmas present for your kids sitting in an Amazon warehouse and no UPS driver to deliver it. There isn't a delivery mechanism that I see that competes with what the right's built.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, when you look at all the measures that the president has done, if I was him, I would be talking about those every week. I'd go to companies. This is one of my suggestions. Find a company that had their raw goods, the costs go up, and therefore they had to inflate their prices post-COVID, but brought their prices back down and did the right thing. And reward them, use carrot and stick. Call out the companies still ripping people off. Call out the companies that are doing good behavior. And I think you'll have more companies that wanna do good behavior, because at the end of the day, you're gonna buy from someone you like rather than someone ripping you off. And I think the president is in a unique position to get that kind of attention. And if he does that, certainly, you know, Donald Trump is not doing anything for a working person between now and November, and certainly not after November. Joe Biden has, and this would go very far.
Yeah, I want to talk about your state because, you know, I remember Donald Trump showing up with his cute little hat and a shovel. They had a little ceremony at that place, that Foxconn place. It was going to be transformational.
Yeah.
Not so much. And then, you know, Biden shows up and they're actually going to do something in that area. The difference between talking about it and doing something, I think, is fairly stark. And I think one of those frames that really needs to be hammered on, because a lot of things, as I see, are getting done. What more needs to be done, do you think, to get that message out to people that, you know, one guy's all talk, one guy's all action. Maybe we want the guy of action.
Yeah, I think the administration's done a good job of talking about the infrastructure. But honestly, I think the average person I talk to thinks that's what we should be doing anyway as a government, is you take all of our tax dollars and you build roads and bridges and you build broadband out and all the rest. And yes, Joe Biden is the only president of the last four or five to actually invest big time in infrastructure. But people understand that, but the cost out of their pockets is still what they're seeing every single week. You know, they have that good paying job because of Joe Biden, and they're going to have it for a number of years because of the investments that we made in that first 2 years of Biden's administration. But if every week you fill up the pickup truck and you're paying too much for gas, and every week you go to the grocery store and you're paying too much for groceries, that works against you. So I just think, you know, let's talk more about where this is at. It's oil executives and big food that's ripping off people. And the president needs to do that himself. And then talk about what he has done. He's created that good paying job, but he's going to try to also protect your pocketbook from those bad actors. And it's not just inflation.
Last question I've got for you. You know, the first time we met was back during the uprising in Wisconsin, during the Act 10 thing. I don't know if you remember, but, you know, when you had 100,000 people in the Capitol, we were broadcasting from Brett Halsey's office, if I remember right. Labor seems to be front and center in your world. I want to get your thoughts on the UAW loss in Alabama, and really the difference, if you could, between, you know, where we're heading. You know, Joe Biden has been the most pro-union president of my lifetime. I can't imagine going back to Donald Trump. I wanted to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I look at UAW and they're doing what I think labor used to do, is actively organize in areas that weren't organized. Why is it that some auto workers are great as union workers and others have not been? And it defies kind of common sense. So they finally said, we're going to go to those and organize them and make sure they get paid well and have good benefits and have safe working conditions so they can see their families at the end of the day. And the Volkswagen right away said, yes, we agree. The fact that it might take a little while because you're going new to these companies doesn't shock me. But the fact that they're finally doing that organizing, like, it's kind of a no-brainer. Why didn't it happen, right? Why weren't we actively trying to make those companies also take care of their workers in a positive way so that everyone then is at a level playing field for competition, which is good for consumers, but it's also good for the workers who are building this. It's a win-win. So in a way, I think, you know, I'm surprised that some of this didn't take place for a while. We're back in a period that UAW is showing us how to do it. Now I think more unions need to do that. Teamsters are doing that with Amazon. You've got in New Jersey, they're organizing marijuana workers through UFCW. Like, you've got a lot of new initiatives happening. And right now, public opinion on unions and workers is at an all-time high.
Yeah, ultimately, though, we got to come back to you, Congressman. We need major comprehensive labor law reform, because if what happened in Alabama is any indication, union busting works. You look at the harassment, the intimidation that went on. We do need major comprehensive labor law reform.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, during Donald Trump, I saw what those agencies did. They did nothing to stop with the tricks that companies did to stop workers. So that's another reason why we have to be ready for November.
There you go. Congressman, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Congressman Mark Pocan. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear skies to take us here through the overnight. A southwest breeze, and by daybreak, temperatures in the lower 50s. On Thursday, sunny skies expected, southwest winds, highs in the mid and upper 70s. We'll see some showers and storms for Thursday night. Right now, it's 58.
Matt Mayer on air.
Dr. Karen Tamarius, she's a political psychiatrist, and we're talking about how to talk to people with which we do not agree.
Think of the mind as a rider on an elephant. The conscious part is the rider, and the emotional part is the elephant. If you want the person to change their mind, you need to talk with the elephant, not the rider.
Matt Mayer on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday on the program, we talked with Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. We were talking about the tariffs that President Biden put on Chinese steel and aluminum, 25% on that, 50% on semiconductors, 100% tariffs on EVs, 50% on solar panels. And the email box doth filled up with, all we're going to do is make China richer if we put these tariffs on. And I'm not quite sure what the thought process that is, but I thought, you know what, it's worth a conversation. Are we going to make China richer by moving to cleaner, greener energy? Or are we going to create an industry at home that maybe we start doing this stuff right here? I'm here to share some thoughts on, well, where we go. I've asked our good friend Mike Williams to come talk with us. Mike's a senior fellow over at the Center for American Progress, where he focuses on domestic climate issues. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Always a pleasure.
So are we making China richer by moving to cleaner, greener technologies like solar panels because they control all of the stuff? Is that reality?
No, it could be, but no, the short answer. The Biden administration is making sure that doesn't happen. They are putting in place tariffs to make sure that we don't get overwhelmed by Chinese electric vehicles, by Chinese solar panels. They are putting in investments so we build up a domestic manufacturing industry. They're putting forward efforts to try to build out a supply chain of non-Chinese suppliers across the world, you know, making sure maybe we get our lithium from Chile instead of China if we can't meet the needs here at home. So no, the answer is no. The thing is though, Rick, there's another part to this. If we sit back and say, no, we can't do this investment. We need to just focus on what we do. We make gas-based vehicles. We make gas-based power plants. Setting aside the climate crisis, of which there is a climate crisis, so we need to deal with that. But setting that aside, even if you don't believe in that, there is a movement afoot across the world in greener technologies for multiple other reasons besides the climate crisis. In the long run, and even in the short and medium run, they're cheaper, they're cleaner in terms of cleaner air, cleaner water, they're more efficient, eventually they were going to become way easier to use. So people want them. They just read an article today about the country of Ethiopia has decided that electric vehicles are so much easier for their citizens. The uptake is just skyrocketing. And guess who's going to be exporting their vehicles there to China. Ethiopia? China. The same thing will happen here if we don't invest, first and foremost, and use our trade enforcement tools, which my friend Scott Paul talks about a lot, of tariffs and other trade protections. The Biden administration is doing both of those things. So, yeah, we could be overrun by Chinese goods if we don't do these things. If we sit on our hands and say, no, 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 or plug our ears and say, no, no, no.
No, I mean, you mentioned a moment ago about being overwhelmed, and yeah, overwhelmed by dumping, because you know I'm seeing articles every day of how many vehicles in excess of what China can domestically consume are just sitting waiting for a place to be dumped, and look, I've had a bunch of people say, well, why don't we just let those cheap EVs in? Poor people could get them; it'd be great for the economy. People would get we'd get the cleaner stuff faster. There seems to be an argument that they're making. Just let the Chinese dump this stuff in. We get cheap stuff, Mike.
Yeah, no, also a bad idea. There's the political economy portion of this. There's just straight raw politics of honestly, let's just let to deal with the climate crisis, let's let the cheap Chinese stuff come in. People will then eventually say, why are we doing this? The people in your inbox, right? And they'll be right if that's the case. They will be proven right. Which the Biden administration thankfully says no. The more important reason, though, is that this isn't just about integrating clean goods into our economy. It's about building a clean economy. It is about building those things here, building an industry, lifting up working people, hardworking Americans. That's also the point. So we shouldn't just import cheap stuff from China. We should try to have a foothold in these supply chains.
But what we're talking about is a major departure from what most of us in our lifetime have been trained to believe an economy is for. Most people I know is for getting cheap stuff. And I keep asking the question, what good is an economy that produces cheap stuff if you don't have jobs to be able to buy the cheap stuff? So for me, what I'm seeing coming out of this administration is truly transformational. Even if our mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media isn't telling that story, I do see us moving in a much better direction as we are, making places the future of manufacturing here at home and holding on to those new technologies that we've gotten accustomed to losing over the last couple of decades.
That's exactly right, Rick. The other part of this too is that we haven't internalized the cost of these goods. The reason why they're cheap is not something that I think most Americans would enjoy. So a lot of these goods are cheap because they're made with extremely poor working conditions. They're made with a government that oppresses people just handing out land grants, just saying, I'm gonna take all of your land, farmers, and we're going to put a factory here and we're going to pay for it. And then we're just going to dump the goods on the global economy. Not fair, terrible to the people there, terrible to the working people here. But that's the cost of low goods. Yeah. And it's not okay. So it's about time that we finally internalized that cost to make sure that when we're purchasing something, we know that the people who made it were treated decently, that it's not screwing over working people, whether in America, whether in China, whether in Germany, wherever, that it's done decently. Yeah. So we need to internalize those costs.
No, I'm with you. And I don't know if you saw the Saturday Night Live skit over the weekend about Shimu,
sure did.
Which I thought was funny. But, the sad reality is, at the end of it is, we know it's bad for us. We know it does harm to other people. We know it's no good. But are you going to do it anyway? Yeah, probably. It seems to be. And look, it's satire, and I completely understand that it's satire. And it's pointing out all of the horribles, and that's what good satire does. But at the end of it, it hits the unfortunate tone of, yeah, we're going to do it anyway.
So, Rick, this also leans into a bugbear, whatever it is, the thing that annoys me a lot. And this is something in the climate movement. This is something that goes back to the tobacco movement. There's this notion that to solve these big intractable problems, you and me, it's up to you and me. We have to solve it. We have to do personal choice issues. When in fact, these issues are so huge, they're systematic, they're giant corporations. That's where they need to be solved. So the issue of Shimu, it's not about, you know, everyday Americans figuring it out, like, oh, where is this made? How do I do this? Yes, we should probably do that. But that's completely taking the onus off of the corporations to do the right things. The ones with billions of dollars in profits, the ones with million-dollar lawyers, it's their job to make sure that these goods are not skirting labor laws and so on and so forth. And there's, on that one, just the SNL skit, there's a pretty easy policy solution to fix that. It's called the de minimis threshold.
Yes.
Getting rid of the de minimis threshold, making it so like anything under $800, we don't need to check at the border. It doesn't matter if they're like teddy bears stuffed with fentanyl, an actual thing that happens, or they're goods that are undercutting everybody else. So, you know, instead, Rick, you need to just not shop at Shimu, or we could have these companies not deal with this.
No, and this is where I was going to go with this. Ultimately, it comes down to the leaders that we elect doing the right thing so that we don't have to, you know, try and figure this out as we're trying to spend our money. Because, look, most people are struggling to make ends meet. And naturally, you're going to go, hey, I can get a T-shirt for $3. You know, hey, I can, you know, get this for, you know, pennies on the dollar. You know, desperate people going to do desperate stuff. And if you leave that out there, you leave that door open, you leave that danger available, sadly, people are going to have no other option.
Yes. And this gets back to the clean tech issue. If we allow China to take over the market instead of investing and using trade enforcement, which the Biden administration is doing, if we just allowed them and then they were dropping $12,000 electric vehicles on the market, you're going to tell me that they're not just going to take over? Because what hardworking person wouldn't say, oh my God, I can get a $12,000 car, brand new car? But then again, then you make it so it has to be up to the person to figure out whether, like, is this the right thing to do or not? That's not fair to them. Instead, we need to make sure that the American economy is protected, that the American economy and the American worker is invested in. No, that's the right solution. And to your point, we need the politicians to do this. And President Biden's doing this.
No, and that's why I'm thrilled. And this is one of those moments where I think of the old Churchill quote, you know, Americans do always do the right thing after doing everything else first. So it seems to me we've done everything else first. And now we're at that point where we're heading in the right direction. And that's why I'm a little concerned come November, but that's a whole nother discussion for another time. So I do want to go back and reiterate the point that I wanted to talk to you about, because look, ultimately there are some very real concerns about moving to electric vehicles. The batteries, we've got some issues with, you know, the chemicals and the minerals that are going to be needed to make solar panels. We don't have this stuff readily available. Is there a way to make sure that China doesn't hold us hostage over these things?
Yes. Yes. There's already a law in place, the Uyghur Forced Labor Protection Act. So it's basically banning anything that comes from the Xinjiang region of China. So that's one part of it. Two, the Inflation Reduction Act gave additional credits to cars that were built with minerals that come from the U.S. or North America or countries we have trade agreements with, so our allied countries. So we're already building that market. We already have it in place. There are multiple EVs right now that fully meet the requirements. We have multiple battery plants being built in the U.S. We have lithium mines being proposed and moved forward in the U.S. So this is already moving apace, Rick. So it's something where, yes, right now, maybe it feels shaky. The vibes are off, as the kids would say. But the reality is that we're on this path.
And no, that's good. But you know, I hear this a lot, you know, and you hear on the Rogan podcast, and they've got people talking about all this. You know, it's much dirtier. It's much worse to build these batteries than it is to run the gas forever. Argument that's being thrown out at us is by moving to this cleaner stuff, we're using all the dirty stuff. And you've seen on social media where the guy with the electric car is charging his electric vehicle with a gas generator in the trunk. you know, these kind of frames people hear and see. I want to make sure that we're addressing this and that it isn't a horror show that they keep telling us it is.
You're right to ask the question, Rick. And yes, I've seen that picture, that meme. That goofball is one goofball. It's kind of a hilarious picture. But yes, no, that is not happening from anybody else. So that hundreds of thousands, if not millions of electric vehicles already on the road in the U.S., there's one doofus who is charging it with a gas-based generator. The Rogan stuff about how an EV is dirtier in its lifespan than a gas-based car, that has been debunked 9 times till Thursday. The just the usage of fossil fuels alone absolutely astronomically makes ICE vehicles, internal combustion engine vehicles, so much dirtier than an electric vehicle. Yes, mining for critical minerals is a invasive and intensive process, but we can do it decently. The other parts of the car are the same as an internal combustion engine. So yes, the battery has different components, and in certain places, especially in China, they're not mined in a decent way, but they are mined decently in other places like the US, like Canada.
And hopefully those jobs come with decent wages, conditions, benefits. Yes. We create an economy around this that lifts us up, you know, much like we did, I don't know, when my grandparents were in the heart of their working lives.
So, Rick, I don't want to lift up this certain car company because the owner is vehemently anti-union and he currently owns the worst social media site in the world. You might know where I'm going with this. But there is a new mine, a nickel mine, coming on board in Minnesota. The workers there will be United Steelworkers members. They're going to pull the nickel out in an incredibly clean, among the cleanest methods known to humans right now. They're doing it very clean. They're going to take it out because it's near the water basin in Minnesota, and they have really strict regulations there. So instead of processing it there, they're going to put it on a train or a truck and move it to North Dakota, where they can process it in a spot where it would not be impactful, in another place where the members are represented by a union. This is then going to go into the battery of an electric vehicle. This is the vision, and that's going to be happening now.
So last question I've got for you on this then, because, you know, if this is happening, why aren't we hearing it? Why isn't this something that's, you know, in our face all the time? Why isn't this administration saying, look at what we're doing? Why aren't we seeing this?
So I think the answer, maybe this is like the resume or the interview question when you're like, what are your weaknesses? Well, I work too hard, right? in some ways, the answer is that there's a lot of this happening. So you see Jennifer Granholm out talking about the battery manufacturing facility, the wind turbine production sites, the semiconductor manufacturing facilities, all of these different success stories coming out of the Inflation Reduction Act, coming out of the infrastructure bill. There's a lot of success happening. And so I think maybe some things are not getting to the forefront of the media.
Well, or they just don't want it there. The moneyed interest that control our media, they just don't want us to hear about it. At least that's where my thinking is. But
we wrote about that story, Talon Metals. We wrote about that story in one of our papers. So we have talked about it, but we're not, you know, a major news outlet, I guess.
Well, we need to get more of that out and about, which is why this fall we're going to be doing our Working Class Heroes tour. Maybe we're going to end up in those places. But Mike, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff. Thanks for helping allay some of the right-wing fears that are being shoved down our throats.
Anytime, Rick. Thanks.
I'm Mike Williams, senior fellow there at the Center for American Progress, americanprogress.org, the website. He is the domestic climate guru over there. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you hearing about these great things that are going on that Mike talked about? Or are you being fed the steady diet of it's all bad, sky's falling? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day that began the first strike of the Chicago Teachers Union. The strike lasted 3 days, but it won teachers a $100 per month pay raise. The school board also agreed to hire 750 more teachers to help ease the overcrowded classrooms that plagued many Chicago public schools. Some of the most important victories of the strike came for Black teachers. Prior to the strike, many Black educators in the city could not find full-time positions. Instead, they were relegated to a permanent substitute status. In order to teach full-time, the teachers had to pass an exam. The exam included an oral portion. Often the testers would fail Black teachers who had moved to Chicago from the South. They called these teachers' Southern accents unprofessional. The oral exam became a way to bar Black teachers from advancing to full-time status. In the years before the strike, Black educators were organizing around this issue. They also demanded changes to the school's curriculum to better include Black history and literature. These Black teachers did not gain much support, even from their own union. They began to organize sit-outs to demonstrate their commitment to these changes. One result of the strike was an end to the discriminatory exam process. After the strike, the school board agreed to include more African-American content in the curriculum. The teacher strike had shown the power of the union. Over the next 20 years, CTU would stage 9 more work actions. Some lasted only 2 days. The longest was 19 days long. In 2002, the Chicago Teachers Union again went out on strike, recalling their historic fighting spirit. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Ah, Rudy Giuliani back in the news. Rudy! Let's start with the coffee. Evidently, there's Rudy Coffee. Rudy has come out with his own brand of a coffee, 100% Arabica beans. Roasted right here in America. Organic. And you know what? As I heard him go through his spiel as he's trying to hawk his new coffee, I started thinking, organic? Is that the target demographic you're looking for? And my mind kept going to, you know, what kind of coffee is it? It's got to be bitter and weak. That seems to be it. Or just for men. But Rudy likes it black, evidently. Or chocolate. I think it was chocolate was what he said. But hey, this is what happens when you go broke. You start hawking whatever you can to the faithful. Because also, same time, he and 10 others pled not guilty in Arizona to charges of allegedly conspiring to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Something minor like that. Rudy's going broke. Now, Rudy, another example of a Trump loyalist kind of being left under the bus. So we're going to see where this goes. And I'm waiting for someone to try the Rudy coffee. I'm not going to. But I'm sure there will be a red hat out there who will tell me how wonderful the Rudy coffee is. Also, we find out that there were more classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. Surprise! And I got to tell you, there's part of me that goes, how long is it going to be until we find out that he did sell trade secrets, that he did give away national secrets? Because again, you know, this kissing up the dictators kind of a thing. Now, look, I have taken a very firm stance. Trump cannot be president. We cannot allow that to happen. And I don't believe you platform him in any way. I don't believe you you help him in any way because we've seen what he's done. That said, I've had a bunch of angry emails from folks. And that's troublesome. But for me, this is a moment of which side are you on? To use an old labor frame. Are you on the side of someone who wants to be a dictator and is telling us what he will do? There's an ad going around that the future, another Reich. I guess we're using the third or fourth Reich. And they're not even trying to hide it anymore. The Schedule F, the Project 2025, all of the talk about retribution, all of this stuff is telling you who he is and how he will lead. It seems simple to me. But I'll tell you, I've taken some flack over this especially from people who I thought were friends. But at the end of the day, you got to stand up and you've got to speak the truth. Now, a couple of emails on the tariff front. There's some folks, you know, we've been talking about Biden putting tariffs on steel and EVs and all this. And I got to tell you, it's amazing how well we have been trained, how repetition and time works. I've got working people telling me, well, you know, if you raise tariffs, that'll mean higher prices. And you go, somewhat, yeah, that's reality. But you also get to protect domestic industry. You get to protect some of your jobs. If you've noticed, maybe you haven't, but we've lost millions of manufacturing jobs. Those used to be good family-sustaining wage jobs. Those used to be career jobs. Those used to be 40 and a gold watch kind of jobs. Now what do we got? We've got a service-based economy where people are, I'll go bring you your McDonald's. I'll do your grocery shopping for you. That's not an economy you build for raising a family. That's not an economy that has a future, in my view. Sorry, you wash my dog, I'll wash your windows. Not such a great economy. So what Biden's doing is what we need to be doing, what we should have been doing for the last couple of decades. What we heard a lot about during the Obama years, even some whispers about it during the Trump years. In fact, they did a lot of press conferences, had a lot of cute little photo ops. There are a lot of really funny pictures. But no movement, no policy, no action. And this is where I keep coming back to. There's a guy who talks a lot. And oh, does he talk a lot. Doesn't usually say much, but there's a lot of words. And another guy who just does the job. Action. You know, I was spending a little time going through some of the projects that were funded by our infrastructure bill, some of the projects funded by the Inflation Reduction Act, some of the projects funded by the CHIPS bill. And it's too much for one person to go through. And I'm only looking in a handful of places. We are making massive investments across this country. And our mainstream corporate-controlled media, they're not, because it's not sexy. It's not something that goes, oh, I got to see that. Not like, you know, Donald Trump was, you know, with a porn star and there's hush money and a whole bunch of religious people went to his defense. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird world we're in. But for me, when I get these people sending me emails going, you know, you just want us to pay higher prices. No, I want you to have jobs. Because the question I've asked for years, which are you first? Are you a consumer or are you a worker? Is it your job that's most important, or is it cheap stuff from Walmart that's most important? Personally, I think how you support your family, that's first. When you sit down at that kitchen table, do you have a bill kitty like a friend of mine in years past who would roll the dice and decide which bills he paid by the roll of the dice until money ran out? I'm a supporter of tariffs because it does a couple of things. It protects domestic industry. It helps new industries get a foothold. And it does raise some revenue because they still want access to the largest consumer market in the world. It doesn't mean they're going to stop bringing products here. It just means that, you know, they may have to take a little bit less profit out of it. Because now you're giving American corporations the ability to compete. You know, we were sold on this idea, and at least I was sold on this idea that we would be able to choose. Remember, the right loves to talk about choice. We'd be able to choose the product on the shelf, an American-made product for a little bit more, or a cheap Chinese knockoff. But I got to tell you, that choice isn't there anymore, if it ever was. So for me, I think we're heading in the right direction. I think tariffs are a part of how we grow this economy and a manufacturing base and how we move this country forward. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Check out freespeech.org for our videos and all of that. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.